Osho. No water, no moon. Talks on Zen stories. Discourse number 8. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Bhagwan, the master Sietsu required larger premises, as the building he was teaching in was very overcrowded. Umezu, a merchant, decided to donate 500 pieces of gold for the construction of a new building. Umezu took the money to the teacher, and Sietsu said, "All right, I will take it." Umezu gave the sack of gold to Sietsu, but he was very dissatisfied with the attitude of the teacher, as the amount he had given was very great. One could live for a whole year on 3 pieces of gold, and the teacher had not even thanked him. "In that sack there is 500 pieces of gold," hinted Umezu. "You told me that before," said Sietsu. "Even if I am a wealthy merchant, 500 pieces of gold is a lot of money," said Umezu. "Do you want me to thank you for it?" said Sietsu. "You ought to," said Umezu. "Why should I?" said Sietsu. "The giver should be thankful."
There are only 2 ways to live your life. Only 2 ways to be. And one is the right way and another is the wrong way. The right is to give, to share, to love. The wrong is to snatch, to exploit, to accumulate. Love and money are the symbols of these 2 ways. Love is the right way and money is the wrong way. Everybody is living the wrong way. Why it happens? What is the dynamics of it? Why everybody goes wrong? Where are the roots? So we will have to penetrate deep. Only then you will be able to understand this beautiful story. And if you cannot understand this story, you cannot understand Buddha, Jesus, Mahavir. No, it is impossible. Because they moved on the path of love. You move on the path of money. And these 2 ways never meet. They cannot meet. Sometimes, even if you try to understand Mahavir, Buddha, Jesus, you try to understand them in terms of the money. Jains go on relating how much Mahavir renounced, how much is the point. If Mahavir had been a son of a beggar, no Jain was going to worship him. He was the son of a great king. He had a big kingdom. Much money, much gold, diamonds. And he renounced them. Suddenly he becomes important to you. The importance is in the money that he renounced, not in him. Even if you approach Mahavir, you approach through money. What absurdity. And then Jains go on emphasizing the fact, exaggerating it, because really the kingdom was not so great. It was a small principality. Because at that time in India there were 2,000 kingdoms. It was just like a small district. And Mahavir's father was not very rich also. But rich, of course. Then they first, they looked at Mahavir because he renounced the money. He became very important. Then they started to exaggerate the amount of money that he renounced. Now they have gone to fantastic, absurd lengths. Whatsoever they say is simply wrong. And then Mahavir becomes important. Throw the money he renounces. Who is really important in your eyes? Why it didn't happen that not a single Tirthankara of Jainas comes from an ordinary family? All the 24 are sons of kings. Why it happened that not a single poor man could become a Hindu avatara? Why only Ram, Krishna, the kings? Why it happened that not a single poor man could become a Buddha? Only Gautam, Siddhartha, the prince. How it happened all the three religions born in India and the greatest? Not that a Tirthankara is not born in a poor family, but you will not recognize him. Not that a Buddha is not born in a beggar's house, but then you will not recognize him. Your recognition can only be through the money he renounces. Buddha is worthless. The money he renounces is the real thing. That attracts you, that hypnotizes you. A man on the path of money cannot understand the man on the path of love. It is impossible, they never meet. You can worship, but you will worship for wrong reasons. Because you cannot understand, your worship is going to be based on something wrong. What is the mechanism? First try to understand why love becomes so impossible, because that is the root. Why you cannot love? If you can love, then money will never be the attachment. Never can be. Why you can't love? From the very beginning, something goes wrong in the mind of a child. Why he can't love? One thing, love is a spontaneous phenomenon. You cannot manipulate it. If you start manipulating it, you will miss it. This is the trouble with spontaneous things. Spontaneous things are beautiful, the most beautiful. But you cannot manipulate them. If you manipulate, they become artificial, something goes wrong. And a child is born, and you start manipulating his love. You say, I am your father, love me. As if love is a logical syllogism. I am your father, therefore love me. I am your mother, therefore love me. He is your brother, therefore love him. And love knows no therefore. It is not a syllogism. We never wait for the child so that love happens to him or her. We start manipulating, controlling, as if we are afraid that if he is left to his own spontaneity, he may not love the mother. There is no necessity. He may not love the father. There is no inevitability. Inevitability. You cannot depend on it. He may not. So before the spontaneous happens, we start forcing the child, and the child has to yield because he is helpless. He starts selling his love. The politics is born. He becomes a politician. He smiles, and deep down he is angry. He shows his love, and deep down there is no love. He hates the father. Every son hates. That's why every society starts forcing the child to respect the father, to love the father, because every culture is aware that the son will hate the father. So create the opposite before the hatred explodes. Every daughter, every girl hates her mother. So love the mother, she is your mother. Respect her. We are so afraid that we create the opposite just as a protection. Why a son hates the father? Not because he is bound to hate. There is a vicious circle. First, conflict is necessary. It is a natural part of growth. A child has to fight with his parents. Otherwise, he will never grow. And the fight starts the very first moment a child is born. The fight starts with the birth. The child wants to be born and the mother wants to hold. That's why so much pain. Now, physiologists say that the pain exists because of the conflict. The child wants to come out and the mother wants to hold him in. This is the conflict. That's why so much pain in birth. Otherwise, in animals there is not much pain. In primitive societies there is no pain. Why? More a woman is civilized, the birth becomes more painful. Because the more you are civilized, the more ego is there, more stronger ego is there. The mother wants to hold the child in. An unconscious fear that the child is leaving her. And this will persist the whole life, that the child is leaving her. And the child has to leave, otherwise he will be dead in the womb. He has to kick the womb behind, go away from the womb. That's natural. And once a mother understands it, there is no pain in birth, then she helps the child to move away. And if you help the child to move away, he will never hate you. This is the problem. If you don't allow the child to move away, if you create barriers, because of those barriers he will hate you. And you are afraid of the hate. So you create the opposite. You force the child to love you and he is helpless. So he has to yield in his helplessness. Not willingly, unwillingly he has to yield. Hate remains deep down, love becomes just a mask, a facet. Then the child is born and then every day he will move away from the mother. He has to, otherwise he will never be independent. He will be never his own self. He has to move every day, in every way. And the mother will not allow, don't go beyond this boundary. Don't go outside the house. Don't go on the street. Don't play with that boy. Don't move. The mother will create more and more boundaries. And the more boundaries are created, the freedom is killed. The child suffers. Hatred is born. Now what to do with this hatred? The mother creates the opposite. But whenever you create the opposite, you have moved in the wrong direction. The hatred has to be understood, accepted, not the opposite has to be created. And you have to know that this is part of growth. The child has to move away and you have to allow more and more freedom. Of course, you have to be very alert because the child can harm himself. So freedom should not become a chaos, and that is very delicate. But in the name that the child may harm himself, if you cut the whole freedom, then you are creating a hateful mind. And if a child starts hating his mother, he will not be able to love any woman ever. Because the first woman has become associated with hatred. That's why you hate your wife, because in the beginning you hated your mother. And you will never be at ease with a woman. A woman will always create an unease. She will attract you and she will repel you also. She will become the focus of your love. But the love will be superficial, because if you couldn't love your mother deeply, how can you love any other woman? Impossible. And behind every love, there will be a running current of hatred. Love becomes divided. The opposite is hidden there. Then everything becomes poisonous. The child will move more and more, and one day he will fall in love with another woman. That is the last break. At that day really the child is born. The birth pain finishes that day. It continues 20 years, 25 years. Every day there is pain and conflict. Then the child, as the final step, falls in love with another woman. That is the breaking point. Now he has left the mother completely. Now another woman has entered. That's why mothers can never be at ease with daughter-in-laws. Impossible. That's why so many stories go around and around against the mother-in-law. They cannot be at ease. Impossible. Because this is the enemy, this woman is the enemy, this man is the enemy who has taken their child away completely. There is a saying of Jesus, one of the most mysterious, impossible to reconcile it with Jesus' mind, and very dangerous, and the wording is also dangerous. Jesus says to his disciples, unless you hate your father and mother, you cannot come to me. A man like Jesus, who says love is the path, who says God is love, who raises love to the highest peak of possibility, makes it equivalent to meditation, says, unless you hate your father and mother, you cannot come to me. He is right. Because unless Jesus becomes your father and mother, you cannot come to a master. Unless you leave your father and mother completely, that is your past, completely, past associations, past relationships, completely, totally, how can you come to a Jesus? How can you come to a Master? If you are still committed to the past, your present is burdened, your future is dark. You have to be uncommitted to the past, completely broken with the past, discontinued. Only then your present is light and your future is not a mechanical progress of the past. Jesus is right. Unless you hate your father and mother, you cannot come to a master. That's why whenever you go to a master, your father and mother are very much disturbed. It has to be so. They are never so much disturbed. You can go to a prostitute. they will not be so much disturbed. You can become an alcoholic, they will not be so much disturbed. But going to a Buddha or a Jesus, to a master, they are absolutely disturbed. Something in the unconscious says, now this is the last break. Now if this boy or this girl goes to a master, then father and mother completely closed. The fear, even with a woman, a son moves, the mother can have some relationship, some sort of relationship. But if the son moves with a Jesus, then all relationship is broken. Then there is no possibility. Because Jesus demands total surrender. No woman can demand it, no husband can demand it, only a master can demand total surrender. No holding back. The child has to move. And when a child becomes enlightened, then he is completely broken, completely, absolutely broken with all the past, with mother, father, everyone. There is another saying which is also very mysterious, looks very hard on the part of Jesus. He was talking to a crowd, and then somebody said, Jesus, your mother is waiting outside, and the crowd is so much, she cannot come in, and she wants to see you. Jesus said, no one is my mother. Tell that woman, no one is my mother. Looks very hard, rude. But Jesus cannot be rude and cannot be hard. But sometimes truth is rude. Truth is hard. And Jesus cannot lie. He is right. No one is my mother. Once it happened, Jesus was a small child, and the father and mother had come to the great temple of the Jews for the annual festival. In the crowd somewhere, Jesus was lost. So they tried and tried. And only by the evening, and they were very much disturbed, worried. By the evening they could find him. He was sitting with some scholars, and he was just a child, and he was discussing with them things about the unknown. So the father said, Jesus, what are you doing here? And we have been the whole day worried about you. Jesus said, don't be worried about me. I was looking at my father's business. So the father said, I am your father, and what type of business you are looking here? I am a carpenter. And Jesus says, my father is there, up in the heaven. You are not my father. Just as a child has to leave the body of the mother, otherwise he will be dead in the womb. He has to come out of the womb. The same mentally also, one day he has to come out of the father and mother womb. Not only physically, mentally. Not only mentally, spiritually. And when spiritually the child is born, is completely out of the past. Broken completely. Only then, for the first time, he becomes a self, an independent reality. He stands on his own feet. He is. Before this, he was just a part of the mother, or the father, or the family. But he was never himself. From the very beginning, the mother and father are trying not to give freedom to the child, and love is born only in freedom, because it is a spontaneous phenomena. You cannot do anything about it. If you do, you will destroy the whole possibility. they try love us, and the child has to yield. He is helpless. Just to exist, he has to bargain. This is a bargain. When a child says, yes, I love you, mother, and when he says, I love no one else like you, when a child says, I love you, father, and there is nobody else like you, you are the unique, the best, the greatest father that ever was. He is just doing a bargain. He is just playing politics. He has become part of a deceiving game. But the sources are poisoned then. And from the very beginning he is not aware that love is a spontaneous phenomenon. You have to be free, waiting, prayerful for it to come. You cannot do anything about it. It is a happening. Now this happening will not happen the whole life. Always he will manipulate. Always he will try to control. Always he will be artificial. Have you ever observed whenever you are in love, you become two. One part manipulating, and deep down you always know you are manipulating. The man is trying to exploit the woman is trying to exploit the man. And once they are married, that is, once their love becomes a bond, the whole falsity by and by disappears. Then the authentic, the real person comes into being, and then there is class. Then the whole love disappears, because that love was never there in the first place. Otherwise, how love can disappear? Love is the most eternal thing in the world. The earth can disappear, the stars can disappear, the whole world can disappear, not love. Love is the very eternal phenomena, the most divine. How it can disappear so soon? Not even the honeymoon is over and love has disappeared. It was never there in the first place. You were just trying to fool the other and yourself also. How long you can fool? And if you go on fooling too long, it becomes such a burden. It becomes so heavy, it becomes impossible to live. You cannot be an actor 24 hours. For a few minutes it is okay, on the beach, in the hills. It is very good. You can be romantic, artificially. For a few minutes it's okay, it is good. It is a game. But 24 hours? 24 hours, if you have to be artificial, it will become such a tense state of mind. It will create so much anxiety. Because you will feel confined, imprisoned. And when you feel that you are confined, imprisoned, you feel the other is the responsible person. Then you revenge, react. Then whatsoever the wife says, you are angry. Whatsoever the husband says, the wife is angry. Then silence becomes golden. The more you can keep quiet is better. But it happens because from the very beginning, the real thing is not there. Mullah Nasruddin was in love with a woman. The woman was very tall. And the woman lived almost 1 mile far away from the trolley end. So Nasruddin used to walk her to the home every evening. One day, just after a few minutes walk, Nasruddin said, give me a kiss. But she was so tall that Nasruddin needed a stool or something. So they looked around, and there was one blacksmith's shop abandoned. They found one anvil there, so he stood on the anvil, kissed the bone, and then they started again towards her home. After half a mile, Nasruddin said, "One more, darling." The woman said, "No, I have given you one, and it is enough for tonight." So Nasruddin said, "Then, what is the use of carrying this damn anvil?" He was carrying that anvil. If you carry a burden, sooner or later, what is the use? If your love is just a means to something else and not the end, then it can be a game, but it cannot become a very meaningful existence. Then you play. Nasruddin presented this woman a wedding ring, a diamond ring. She looked at it and said, "Beautiful, but there is one flaw in the diamond." Nasruddin said, "Honey, have you not heard that love is blind?" The woman said, "Yes, I have heard, and I know love is blind, but not stone blind." The cunningness, the manipulating mind. You can even play that you are blind, but how can you be blind really? You can play, but play cannot become life. And deep down, you are not related to it. And then you start hating. Love can be only spontaneous. There is no other way to it. Whatsoever Dale Carnegie say, there is no other way to it. Love can only be spontaneous. You cannot be trained for it. Trained, you will miss forever. One has just to wait. Wait prayerfully. The child should be allowed freedom so that someday love arises. But a very daring mother and a very daring father is needed. That's why I always say to be a mother is one of the most difficult things in the world. Anybody can give birth to a child, but to be a mother and to be a father, very few are qualified. Rarely. Because to be a mother means to give the child so much freedom with much love that the spontaneous love in the child arises. The child must fall in love with the mother. He should not be forced. It may happen, it may not happen. That's why it is a very courageous act. It may not happen. Nobody knows. Nobody can predict it. It is not mechanical. If it happens, it will be beautiful with the mother. Otherwise, the mother can go on praying that this will happen with some other woman. But don't force it. If you force it, the child has learnt a trick. He has learnt a gimmick. Now he will go on playing the gimmick again and again, with this woman and that, with this man and that, and the whole life will become a gimmickry. It will not be real, it will become artificial. When love becomes artificial, money becomes important. This is to be understood. Why money becomes important when love is artificial? Because love gives you an inner security. When you are in love, you are safe. No other safety is needed. When you are in love, you are absolutely secure. No other security is needed. Love is enough. Nothing else is needed. You can be a beggar on the street, but if you are in love, no emperor can compete with you in your security. Even Solomon is a poor man before you. If you are in love, you are the richest. Nothing is in any way comparable to the riches of love. You may not have anything, but you have all. A single moment of love and the whole life is fulfilled. When you are in love, you are never afraid of death. Because you have known a death, the death of love, and it was so beautiful. It was so malicious. It was such a benediction that now you can accept even the real death, the death of the body. You can accept it. Now there is no fear because you have known that merging into one woman or one man was so beautiful. How much beautiful it will not be when you merge with all existence. Death is a merger. If you know love, there is no fear in death. If you don't know love, then fear becomes the center of your life. How to protect yourself? So you make castles, then you make bank balances. These are just protections against death. And when you are afraid of death, you are afraid to live. Because to live is always dangerous. To live, you have to move on unknown paths. And there is danger in every corner, and death may be waiting. A man who is afraid of death, by and by shrinks and becomes afraid of life also. He cannot fly in an aeroplane. He cannot go in a train because there are accidents. He cannot make a stranger a friend because who knows? He cannot fall in love with a woman because who knows whether she is going to deceive or not. He cannot believe. If love has not happened, you can never be trusting. You are always doubtfully skeptical. And how a relationship can grow when you are in doubt? And if love has not happened, you can never reach to a master. Even if a Buddha comes to your town, you will miss him. You will not go there. Because these people are dangerous. They can hypnotize you. And they may lead you astray. They may disturb your routine world, where you are earning, accumulating, and where you are getting successful every day. The factory is going bigger and bigger, and the bank balance accumulating, and everything is going so good. Why get disturbed with a new foreign element? So don't allow any element from the outside. Live in your prison, sheltered, secure. If you know love, you are not afraid of death. And when you are not afraid of death, then only you become capable to live. Because a man afraid of death, how can he live? He is even afraid of taking breath because germs are there. I know one poet. He's a great poet. But I have always been wondering, how can he be a great poet? He cannot be even a man. He must be knowing the tricks of language. He must be a grammarian. He must be playing tricks with words. But he cannot be a great poet because great poetry comes out of life. And he is so afraid. Once he traveled with me, his wife has told me that don't take him with you because he will create trouble. And trouble started. because he will not take the tea from the hotel. He said, who knows? Somebody may have poisoned it. But Vyas, who is against a poet? Who is going to poison you? Nobody bothers about you. But he will not take. He said, I will bring a stove and prepare tea. He will not take the food in the hotel. Because who knows? He was so afraid of everything. How can this man live? As if the only point is not to die. But life brings death. That is the culmination. If you don't want to die, don't live. That is the only way. There is no other way, because if you live, you are moving towards death. Life brings death. So the logical way is not to live. The less you live, the less possibility of death. If you don't live completely, if you commit suicide, you will never be dead again. You have finished. There is no life, now you cannot die. So such a man becomes already a dead man. You will find these corpses moving in the markets, universities, working, doing things, but they are corpses. Life needs expansion. Fear cannot allow you. Then security becomes the whole thing. How to be secure? How not to die becomes the whole art of life. And I tell you, the whole art of life is how to die joyfully, how to die blissfully, how to allow death. Because if you are ready to die, you are ready to live. If you are ready to die, you are ready to love. If you are ready to die, you are ready to meet the divine. There is no other way. Death is the door. What I mean when I say death is the door, you have to be not there. You have to dissolve. You have to lose yourself. What security means? Whatsoever happens, you have to be. You have to persist in your ego. That's why money is so meaningful. Because money helps you not to live. A poor man has to live. A rich man need not. I have heard about one very rich man. He will move in the car, even from the porch to the room, he will be carried in a stretcher. He had come to a new town, to a new hotel where he had never been. And when he was being carried in a stretcher, the manager thought that he is paralyzed or something. So he asked his wife, what is the matter? He felt very sorry. Your husband looked quite okay. Is he paralyzed or something is wrong with his legs? The wife says, no, his legs are absolutely okay. But he need not walk. He is a rich man. A rich man need not live. He can afford it. A poor man has to live. A poor man has to go on the street, move in danger, in crowds. A poor man cannot afford not to live. That's why rich man by and by becomes encased in his richness, isolated. Then he lives alone. Then he cannot even allow his wife in the room. He may find explanation that we are not poor, so wife and I should live in one room. We are rich, we can afford two separate rooms. But the real thing is something else. Hitler never allowed anybody to live in his room because he was afraid. Who knows, the wife may be a spy. He never got married. He got married only just before he committed suicide, 3 hours before. because then there is no fear. When death was certain, he got married. Never before, because a wife is a dangerous thing. Who knows? See, maybe in association with some foreign powers, or she may be a communist. In the night, she may kill. He loved many women, but never allowed any woman to live with him, and never allowed any woman in the night to be in his room. Just before 3 hours, when he decided now there is no way to escape, death is certain, the enemy is bombing on the Berlin, he called a priest in the night. The priest was awakened from his sleep. Immediately he was brought to the underground cell where he was, and he told him that now perform the marriage ceremony. And by the time the ceremony was finished, they both went into the room and both took poison and were dead. What manner of man is this? But this manner of man you will find everywhere. When fear is there, nobody can be a friend. Then everybody is enemy, and you have to protect yourself. A rich man can protect himself more. That's why so much emphasis on money, so much madness. You cannot even understand what is happening. Why this neurosis about money? Mullah Nasruddin was dying. He opened his eye, looked at his wife. The wife said, "We are here, Mullah. You go to the divine silently in peace and prayer. We all are here." Mullah Nasruddin looked at the faces. His eyes were dim. He was almost gone. It was difficult to see. He asked, "Where is Rahman?" His eldest son. The wife said, "He is standing by our right side." And then he asked, "Where is Rahim?" Another son. And the wife says, "He is there, standing by our feet." And "Where is Abdul and where is Farid?" he asked. "All were there." The wife said, "You rest. We are all here." Nasruddin immediately became worried and said that, "Who is minding the store? If everybody is here, then who is minding the store?" And he is on deathbed. Just a moment later he died. No, neither life is meaningful nor death. The store. Who is minding the store? Even at the last moment, no temple is there in the mind, just the store, the market, the money. Why money is so important? It is your protection against love, against life, against death, against God. Hence, Mahavir and Buddha renounce it. The renouncement is simply coming to understand that this whole arrangement is against life, against love, against God. They simply renounce. It is not against money that they are renouncing it, just because they have come to understand that through this protection they have been killing themselves. This was poison. So they simply escape from the palace. Then a new life starts when you understand that money is neurosis. Security, the hankering after security and safety, shows that you are already dead. The life has left you. Continuous effort to be secure means you have not yet been able to love. Otherwise, love is enough security. No other is needed. One moment of love is eternity. No fear of death. A lover can die easily. lovingly. He has known life, he is thankful. Even for a single moment, love happened, he has known the glory of it, the benediction. All blessings have been on him. He can thank God for the single moment that has been given to him, and he was not worthy. What? Who is worthy? Nobody is worthy. Have you ever thought about it, that you are alive? Are you worthy to be alive? How you have earned it? You have known the flowers and the trees and the birds on wing and the sun rising, so many mornings and so many evenings, and the stars. How you have earned to be alive? It is a simple grace. You are not worthy. You have not earned it in any way. It is simply God's grace that you are. But when somebody comes to know a single moment of love, this whole life is nothing. Then all the words that you have seen and all the songs that you have heard and all the musicians of the world, nothing. Then all these greenery of the trees is nothing. Then there is no radiance in sun and there is no music in the stars. If you have known a single moment of love, then this whole world is just dim and shadow. It is just a reflection, not the real. If you have known a single moment of love, for eternity and eternity you will be thankful and singing songs of gratitude to the divine. Then there is no death. Love knows no death. Love knows only life. You know only death. Love. You have bypassed it. Somehow, you have not been through it, you bypassed it. And now money becomes significant. Money is symbolic of a dead man. Money is the love of a dead man. So look at a miser. It is not simply money when he takes notes in his hands. I have seen one miser. So much romance in his eyes when he will look at the notes. So lovingly. Never a lover has looked at the beloved. He will feel and touch. And look at his eyes. The radiance that comes to his eyes. The poetry that takes over all over his being. He becomes completely a transformed man. No, Majnu was not so happy when he looked at Leela. No, Siri was not so happy when she looked at Farihad. When this man, and he was a relative, so I had many chances to see him and understand him. He was the perfect man of money, a Buddha on that path. He never got married. He was always said, it is so expensive. And I cannot afford it. Someday I will get married. He is now dead. He never got married. He remained a bachelor. But he will rationalize it. He will say, this is brahmacharya. He will say, this is celibacy in the scriptures, in the Vedas. The life of a celibate is the highest life. But he was simply a miser. Even miser about seamen. That was his celibacy, not a brahmacharya. So if you find celibates, 99 out of 100 will be just misers about semen. They are afraid to let go. If the semen goes out of the body, their bank balance is less. Their brahmachari is a sort of constipation. They stink. You can have never any fragrance coming out of them. They are misers, but they rationalize. And they always live through the reason, never through the heart, because heart is a dangerous thing. Reason always grabs things, and heart always wants to give. Heart is the giver, and heart is never a miser. So a miser can never believe the heart. He will by and by kill the heart. He becomes just the head. There is no feeling in him. Feeling is dangerous. He doesn't feel. He becomes insensitive. He does not allow any sensitivity in his being, because a beggar comes and he asks, if you have feeling, it will be difficult to say no. But if you have only the head, you will rationalize and you will say, I don't believe in beggary. This is bad for the economy. This is not good for the culture. And you look perfectly healthy. So go and work. You will rationalize. And these reasons you also know just are superficial. Deep down you don't want to give. That's the base. But you cannot accept the fact that you are not a giver. You live in words. Reasons, rationalizations, and go on hiding the basic fact that you are killing your feeling. If you are on the path of money, and everybody almost is, more or less, then see the whole phenomenon of what is happening within you. You are killing yourself. And life cannot be prevented from moving. Life will reach to death. You cannot withhold it. It is not in your control. It has to go as it has come. It has to go before it leaves you. You can only create anxiety, that's all. If you accept the ebb and flow of life, the birth and death of life, if you accept, you need not create any anxiety. You can love while time is there, love. And allow love to happen. Don't try for security and don't be afraid of death. Death will come. Give a chance to life to flower. If life really flowers, death will be the culmination, not the end. It will be the climax, the crescendo. It will be the highest peak, the Everest. Not the end. And at the moment of death, one man who has lived rightly through love, and that is the only right way to live, for him death comes as the most beautiful ecstasy. He dies with a song in the heart. He dies with an ecstasy all over the body throbbing. He is going to meet the Divine Beloved. He has learned how to love and how to give. So in the moment of death also he can give. He gives his whole being back to the nature, the body. The air goes to the air, the fire goes to the fire, the earth goes to the earth, the sky goes to the sky. He gives. He is a giver. And the being goes to the source, to the Brahma. He does not cling. At the moment of death, if you cling, everything becomes ugly. But you cannot do if the whole life you have been a clinger. If you have been clinging and clinging and clinging and always afraid and in fear, and never allowed love, then at the moment of death you will miss the highest peak that is possible, that was possible. These are the two paths. One is right, another is wrong. Now we will try to go into this story. You will be able to understand. But understand through the heart. The master ceases to require larger premises as the building he was teaching in was very overcrowded. He must have been in the same situation as I am. Umeju, a merchant, he has not come yet to me. Umeju, a merchant, decided to donate 500 pieces of gold for the construction of a new building. 500 pieces of gold is real money. Umeju took the money to the teacher and Sisu said, "All right, I will take it. But this is no way from a miser." The man must have been a miser, otherwise how can you accumulate 500 pieces of gold? And this was not all. This must have been just a small part, a hundredth part of his accumulations. But why, if he is a miser, he has come to give to this master? Looks contradictory. If he is a miser and a man of money, he should not go. But I know the reason. That too is part of fear. That too is making security in the other world. He must be nearing death. He must have become an old man. And people of money are always old. They are never young. Because death is always near and they are trembling. He must have been feeling any day the death can come. So he has to make arrangements for the other world also. He must be having millions of gold pieces. Just 500 pieces. And this is just to be safe. Give it to this master. People say he is enlightened. Give these 500 pieces to this man. He will take care of the other world. He may give a certificate. Or people say that he is in good terms with the gods. His name is in the good books. He will be helpful somehow. It is groping in the dark. A man who has missed life is thinking of some other life. Remember, only people who have missed this life think of that. And if you can miss this, you will miss that also. Because you will remain the same. Even if you are forced to enter into heaven, you will make a hell out of it. Because you will take your habits, your mechanism of the mind, your working, your whole past you will take with you. You will make a hell out of it. Can you be in heaven? I don't see any way. You cannot be. Wherever you go, you will carry your hell with you. It is part of you. So those who know this say, hell and heaven are not without, they are within you. They are qualities of your being. On this earth people have lived in heaven. On this earth you are in hell. Remember well, wherever you go, you will provide your own hell there. Immediately you will reach there and you will create your hell all around. You cannot do anything new. The mind is old. It goes on in a pattern, moving in a circle. This Omejo must have been a miser. But now death is coming near and he must think of the other world also. This he has lost. Now the other cannot be lost. Something has to be done. But that too has to be done through money. See the mind. He thought that through money life can be purchased. Now he thinks through money the God can be purchased. He thought through money love can be purchased. Now he thinks through money heaven can be purchased. But his mind remains focused in the neurosis of the money. He is still mad. Money remains the means still. Anything that he is going to do is to be done through money. That's why the master behaved in such a way. He said, all right, I will take it. As if it is nothing. That is the meaning of it. As if it is nothing, 500 pieces of gold, just dirt. The master says, all right, I will take it. As if it is a burden, and he is obliging this homage. And always remember, if you go to a master with money, this is going to be the treatment. It is very easy to understand in this story. It is very difficult when the treatment is given to you. Just a few days before, somebody phoned. He used to give some money for the ashram. Then he said, now I will stop. Because there seems to be no gratefulness about it. I am not even allowed a special interview with Bhagwan. So I am not going to give it. He is here. He should try to understand this story well. Because it is easier to understand a story when you are not part in it. It is very easy. But when you are part in it, then it becomes very difficult. 500 pieces of gold that man should bring to me. Right? And then I will tell him, all right, I will take it. Umeju gave the sack of gold to Sesu, but he was very dissatisfied with the attitude of the teacher. As the amount he had given was very great, one could live for a whole year on 3 pieces of gold. And the teacher had not even thanked him. Look at the mind. The mind which is neurotic about money. What he is saying? He is saying, this sack of gold I have given, a man can live with 3 pieces of gold for 1 year. He thinks life is through money. Money may be needed, but nobody can live through money. Money may be necessary. It is not enough. And if there is only money and nothing else, it is better you die sooner, the better. Because you are living unnecessarily. You are just passing the days. It is no life. Jesus is reported to have said, man cannot live by bread alone. He also knows that bread is needed. Nobody can live without bread, that's right. But there is a higher dimension of life where nobody can live with bread alone. And only if bread is there, commit suicide. Because eating the same bread again and again is useless. But the man who lives through money thinks that a man can live a whole year with 3 pieces of gold, and these are 500 pieces. A man can live forever and forever. Eternal life is possible through 500 pieces of gold. And what type of man is this? He has not even thanked. He was very dissatisfied. Whenever you give with a condition, you will always be dissatisfied. Because the condition cannot be fulfilled. Whenever you give without a condition, you will feel deep contentment. Because there is no reason to be dissatisfied. Whenever you give and enjoy it, whenever giving is an end unto itself, this man would have been danced that the master has accepted. Enough. He should have thanked the master that I was worried whether you are going to accept it or not. Because I know you well. This is just dirt for you. And you have accepted. You are so kind. Your compassion is so deep. He must have danced and thanked. Would have gone deeply happy and blissful. But no, it was not possible because it was not the end. It was a means. He wanted the master to be obliged to him. If this man reaches to God, he will give him a sack of gold and would wait for the thank you. What you can give to the God who has given all to you? And a master is nothing but a representative of the divine, of the same quality. That's why we call Mahavir Bhagwan, we call Buddha Bhagwan, because of the same quality. What you can give to him, all comes to you through him. At the most you are returning back. At the most. You should be thankful that you have been accepted. But a money madman cannot understand this. He wanted the master to be obliged because he has done this. And this is so much. For him it was so much. As far as his attitude is concerned, it was such a great amount. 500 pieces of gold. One man can live for 1 year for 3 pieces. Because mind thinks in relativity. It does not know anything of the absolute. It knows only of the relativity. It is his mind. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin died and went immediately, or was sent immediately to hell. There he reached, the Satan was waiting for him for long. He was a man to be waited there. He received him, welcomed him, and said, Mullah Nasruddin, to the devil, boy, am I happy being here to be in heaven? The devil said, Nasruddin, you are mistaken. This is no heaven. Nasruddin said, that may be your attitude. I am coming from India. To me it looks a heaven. Mind is relative. 500 pieces of gold. He was giving his very life. The very heart was there in that sack of gold. Those 500 pieces were not of gold, they were of his heart. He has sold his life and bargained for this gold. He is dead for this sack of gold. And not even a thank you. It was too much. The master is not behaving rightly. He was dissatisfied. If you think about any master, you will always come to the conclusion that he is not behaving rightly. Remember this. If you think, I repeat, then you will always come to the conclusion that he is not behaving rightly. If you look, not think, then you will know that he is always behaving rightly. He thought, calculated. It was so plain to him. 500 pieces of gold, his whole life in that sack. And this man says simply, "All right, I will take it." In that sack there is 500 pieces of gold, hinted Umeju. He thought maybe he has missed. Maybe he is in meditation or somewhere else. Because how it can happen? There are 500 pieces of gold and he is saying, "All right, I will take it." He is not in his senses. So he hinted, "In that sack there is 500 pieces of gold," hinted Umeju. "You told me that before," said the master. He said, "It is unnecessarily. Why repeat? I have heard it." This was even more. No thank you coming from the man. Rather, even he will not take the hint. And he felt a little angry, it seems. Because he said, "You have told me that before. No need. Even if I am a wealthy merchant, 500 pieces of gold is a lot of money," said Umeju. This is the problem of the mind. He says, "Even if I am a wealthy merchant, I have enough money with me. Even then, 500 pieces of gold is a lot of money. So to you, just a beggar." It is the whole world. To me it is a lot of money. And you are treating it as if it is nothing. You are insulting me. A man who is focused in money cannot understand the man of love. The man of love will always appear like a beggar, a madman. Not of this world. He doesn't understand. He is behaving in a crazy way. Howsoever you may worship Buddha and Mahavir, if you meet them somehow, somewhere, you will think they are mad. Even if you don't say it, because it will be so impolite, but you understand well that this man has wasted his life sitting under a tree. He could have earned a lot of money. This was said to Buddha many times. When he left his home and reached another kingdom, just to get rid of the relatives and the family, because they will bother him there and they will go on coming and persuading and trying him to come back. So he left the kingdom, reached to another kingdom. Then he became aware that those people are everywhere, you cannot escape. There was rumor that a prince has left of the neighboring kingdom and he has come here. So even the king of the neighboring kingdom came and he said, "My son, you are young and you don't know the ways of the world. You are immature. I am experienced. I say to you through my experience, go back to your home. This is foolish. At this age, such foolish ideas catch hold of the mind. One has to resist. At this age, when one is young, one is prone, tends to be idealistic. But later on, experience proves it is wrong. Don't be a hippie. Go back." Buddha listened and he said, "You may be right as far as your own experience is concerned, but I have lived in that world for many lives and nothing was ever attained. Now it is enough. It is through experience that I have left, not through some romantic idealism of a young man. The old man will not listen. He said, if you don't want to go back, I understand there may be some trouble. You may not be feeling good with your father or with your family, or something has gone wrong. Then don't go back. Come to me. I have got a beautiful daughter. Get married to her. And this kingdom is yours. Buddha said, I am married. And I have left a very beautiful woman. It is impossible to find another like that. But even that beautiful woman will not give me the ultimate. And I am in search of the ultimate. The old king left, said, you are mad, incurably mad. This happened wherever Buddha will go. And he was so young and so beautiful. He has never walked on the streets. Wherever he will go, anybody will come to know that he is a prince, he is not a beggar. And then everybody will give him advice to go back. Mind lives through its own ideas, thinks through its own ideas. You cannot put the mind aside and then look. This old man who came to Buddha missed an opportunity. It may not happen for millions of lives again. But he was teaching the greatest teacher. He was trying to teach him something. He wanted that he should learn something from him. And he has not gained anything. Himself, he has not reached anywhere. This man says, in that sack there is 500 pieces of gold. Even if I am a wealthy merchant, 500 pieces of gold is a lot of money. And you are just a beggar. It is not said. It is implied. You should know the meaning of it, what I am doing. Such a great donation. And you simply say, okay, I will take it. Do you want me to thank you for it? Said the master. Because masters never answer what you ask. They answer what you mean to ask. They never answer your question, because that is irrelevant. They always answer what is hidden behind the question. Why you are hinting these things? You are not interested to prove that gold is significant. You are not interested to prove that 500 pieces of gold is a lot of sum. Those are just rationalizations. You are hinting at something else. The master caught him immediately and said, do you want me to thank you for it? He hit the nail right at the heart. Said the master, you ought to, said Umeju. Not that I expect and want, you ought to. This man is not a giver. He has never been a giver. Even when he is giving, he is not giving. Even when he is donating, it is a bargain. He says, you ought to. I have done such a great thing. Now this is your duty, not my desire or my request. Why should I, said the master, the giver should be thankful. This is impossible to understand for the mind, money oriented. The giver should be the thankful. But this is at the peak, at the path of love. Those who love, they come to know that the giving is so beautiful and so blissful. They come to know the more you give, the more you have of it. The more love you give, the more love you have it there inside. The more you go on throwing, sharing, the more it bubbles up. It is the eternal spring. And once you come to know it, that the more you give, the more you have learned the basic arithmetic of spirituality. Then you never hold back. Then you are always in search of someone who can take it. Then you are always in search of someone who can share it. Because he will make you fresh. The old is gone and new arises. It is always coming there. You are like a well which has gone rotten because you have not given anybody anything. You have never shared your water. The water has become rotten. Give it. Let people come and let them drink out of you. And then fresh sources are always available. The moment the old water is removed, fresh is coming in. Your well is joined to the infinite ocean, deep down. Your well is just a door to the ocean. The giver comes to know. The sharer comes to know. Then he feels thankful. Whenever somebody takes something from you, a new has come into being in you. Your being is renewed through it. You are being young again and again. The more you give, the giver remains always young. The non-giver is always old, dead, rotten. Says the master, the giver should be thankful. You should be thankful to me that I accept. And I accept a thing like money. You should be thankful because money means nothing to me. It may be necessary in the world because a master has also to live in the world. It may be the means of exchange in this mad world because a master has to live in this mad world. But it is nothing. It is just a invented means, agreed upon by all, so that we can exchange things. The society can live without money. For thousands of years, society lived without money. And sooner or later, a day will come when society will live again without money. Because living through money is so burdensome and so useless and so unnecessary that because the world was poor up to now, that's why the money has to be used. But as more affluence grows, America will be the first to drop money. When the money is enough, no need to carry it. Why carry it? Then it is foolish. Then it is burdensome. Soon the earth will not need money. But the masters have known it always, that this is just a market device. But a master has to live with you. If you go to a madhouse, it is better to pretend that you are also mad. Otherwise you will be in difficulty. If you try to prove that you are a sane man, the madman will kill you. They did this with Jesus. They did this with Socrates. They did this with Mansur. These are very innocent people. They tried to live in a madhouse as they were, not mad. They were innocent, but they did not know that the rule of the madhouse is, even if you are not mad, pretend that you are mad, because madness is the coin there prevalent. It is the currency there. Don't be an outsider in a madhouse, otherwise madmen will collect together and kill you. If you try that you are not mad, that means you are trying to say to them that you are mad. That cannot be tolerated. An enlightened person also has to live in this world with you. He has to use your techniques, your tricks. It happened once, it was found that in Japan, and one enlightened man was always caught, sometimes stealing, sometimes something else, a criminal act, small things, just a small money he will steal. And he was an enlightened man, and then he was to be sent to the jail. For 26 times in his whole life he was jailed. But those who were his disciples, they knew him. Last time when he came out of the jail, he was 78. And the disciples said, now don't do such a thing. And why you go on doing such things? He said, then who will go inside the jail and try to make those jailers meditative, those prison birds? Who will go there? I have to steal, that is the only way to reach those people. And it is nothing to me. I have been helping. And there is real disease. I am needed there. But that is the only way I can get into. Otherwise they won't allow me. That is the only currency that is required. An enlightened man has to live with you jailbirds. But if you are ready to understand the neurosis of money and the ecstasy of love, then you will be able to understand this. The giver should be thankful. Give and be thankful. Because the other could have refused. That possibility does not exist for this miser. He cannot conceive anybody refusing 500 pieces of gold. He does not know. He could have been refused. The master may have thrown the sack out of the temple and said, don't bring this rubbish here. It happened. One man came, he was also with 500 pieces of gold. These misers have also their mathematics. 500 seems to be the highest, the limit. They cannot go beyond it. He came to Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna was even more dangerous. He not only said, all right, I will take it. He behaved even more rudely. He said, so okay, go to the Ganges and throw all. The man couldn't do anything because Ramakrishna says he became afraid. It was impossible for him to go to the Ganges and throw 500 pieces of gold. But when Ramakrishna says, still he hesitated. Ramakrishna says, why are you hesitating? Have not you given the money to me? Then it is my money. You just go and throw it into the Ganges. Because right now I don't need it, and the Ganges needs it. So the man went, very slowly of course. And he will not come. 1 hour passed and 2 hours passed. And Ramakrishna sent some disciples and look what happened to that man. Has he drowned himself and saved the money? Misers are doing that. So the disciples went. What he was doing, there was a big crowd. He has made it a great show. He will bring one gold coin, put it, throw it on the stone, come the sound, and the many people were there. And then he will count it, 101, 102, 103, and throw into the Ganges. So the disciples reported that that man is a perfect exhibitionist. He has gathered a big crowd and he is throwing a single coin, counting and doing the whole thing very slowly. So Ramakrishna went, he slapped that man and told him, when one accumulates, counting is needed. But when one renounces, what are you doing? When one has to throw, one can throw the whole bag. But people renounce and still count. They have not renounced. Givers should be the thankful. Give and be thankful. If you can follow this rule, the old pail will fall down. The water will flow out. The whole Maya disappears. No water, no moon. Then you can look at the sky, at the real moon. It is always there, but you are caught into the reflection. Love is the real moon. Money is the reflection. Enough for today.